Well, hey there, vinyl record collectors. Here's a website I highly recommend checking out. AudiophileUSA.com. AudiophileUSA.com sells only near mint and still sealed vinyl records. They somehow find old store stock, sometimes 30 or 40 years old, and makes them available to you. AudiophileUSA.com has over 42,000 titles in stock and are constantly updating their selection. Head over to AudiophileUSA.com. They're a family-owned and operated business, and they ship globally. Anyone listening to us from Asia, Europe, South America, or heck, even Australia, AudiophileUSA.com can get you the records you want, packed well to please even the most discerning record nerd. And of course, they ship in the USA too. That's AudiophileUSA.com. Find your holy grail. So here we go. Let's start today's episode of The Vinyl Guide.
This is JJ Burnell from The Stranglers, and you've been listening to me on The Vinyl Guide, hosted by Nate Goya.
Do you listen to and collect vinyl records? Well, you're in luck. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast made for record nerds like yourself. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Oh, well, hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. This is Nate, host of The Vinyl Guide, and wow, what an episode we have for you today. This week, we are talking to JJ Burnell, founder, bassist and songwriter of The Stranglers, the English rock band who started alongside punk contemporaries like Sex Pistols and The Clash. They bucked the odds to develop a style that is uniquely their own and have become one of the longest surviving and continually successful bands. Now, for those of you keeping score, The Stranglers have scored 23 top 40 singles and 17 top 40 albums to date in the UK, and they continue to record, release, and tour. And in fact, they are coming to Australia beginning of February, Perth, Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, Adelaide, then on to New Zealand, Christchurch, Wellington, and Auckland, then back to Europe. All details, tour dates, news, and vinyl records can be found at thestranglers.co.uk. Now, Jean-Jacques Burnell, or JJ as he's known, is a very charming interview, very confident, very humorous. JJ has a musical history that is interesting and unique, so even if you're not familiar with The Stranglers at the moment, I think you'll certainly be interested in checking them out after you hear today's interview. I'd suggest starting at the very beginning. Rattus Norvegicus is a good starter, then perhaps the album Black and White. And then for you experimental types, check out The Gospel According to Men in Black. No relation to the film. These three records will show you how the band continually reinvents itself, continues to challenge one another, and pushes the musical boundaries. The Stranglers are not a band who makes every album sound the same or even slightly different. They're certainly well worth spending some quality time digging through their back catalog. And of course, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the passing of Andy Gill, founder, leader, guiding light of Gang of Four, and music producer and contributor to many bands, including The Stranglers. Andy produced The Stranglers' 1997 album, Written in Red, amongst other great works. So we do want to acknowledge the passing of Andy. We put a recent interview up, episode number 202, Andy and I talking through some great stories of Gang of Four's past, production work, vinyl records, and more. So check it out, episode 202 of The Vinyl Guide. And finally, I've been uploading videos to The Vinyl Guide's YouTube page, so make sure you Google that and check it out and subscribe from there. One of the videos I recently uploaded was a record restoration project using Seems Easy record jacket repair strips and, of course, the Groove Washer record cleaner. Take a look at the video. I took a Beat the Hell Miles Davis record I paid $5 for and turned it into a clean and ready-to-enjoy copy, of course, using Seems Easy and the Groove Washer. So give them a Google or go to seemseasy.com. That's two Z's, seemseasy.com. And of course, groovewasher.com. You get 10% off anything at groovewasher.com with the discount code VINYLGUIDE10. That Seems Easy and Groove Washer, they are the dynamic duo of record repair. Get them now and thank me later. And now, let's start our conversation with JJ Burnell of The Stranglers. Hello, Jean-Jacques.
Ooh, that's a good voice. Hello, is that Nate Goyer?
This is Nate Goyer. Good evening. Good morning, actually, I should say.
Good morning to you. Good evening to you.
Yes, yes. Where am I calling right now? Where are you at?
Well, I was just going to ask the same question. I'm in the west of England, and it's really, there's a huge storm going on. It's very wet. I'm very close to Bath, the city of Bath. You know that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I do. So, yeah, we need some of that rain down here. We're in Australia.
Yeah, I know. Where are you calling from?
Sydney.
Okay, how's the breathing?
Not so bad these days. It's all right. It was a lot worse in December. Right now, Melbourne, the southern part of the country, is kind of getting the bad end of the stick here.
Yeah, we've been following it because, I mean, in the UK, it's been huge news, and all the repercussions, including involving Scott Morrison and the questions about Australia being the biggest exporter of coal in the world, and the Australian Open, and also because I live in France, they've been following it hugely in France as well. So there'll be repercussions once it's hopefully over.
Oh, there's plenty of repercussions happening now. And I tell you, I love living in Australia. I've been here 20 years. I was originally from the States. And
yeah, I can tell that.
Yeah, I still got the California accent, dude. And
you California.
Yes, yes. But I've been on Australia 20 years. But here down here, you know, the Australians, whenever something happens, the country just really comes together. There's that sense of community, and I've seen it time and time again. And this is another time. So you know, it's with all the horrible things that are happening with the bushfires, it is really nice to see the you know, our fellow countrymen coming together and being, you know, good to one another.
Yeah, well, that's the mark of a country, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you guys are going to be here very soon.
Yeah, very soon. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
So today, I don't know if you know too much about our show, but we talk about vinyl records quite a bit here.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So are you a vinyl record fan? Do you still play your records?
I absolutely am a vinyl fan. And we've been releasing vinyl for the last few years. Any Stranglers release has also been on vinyl because it's still, come on, let's face it, it's still the best sound.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You're not going to get any argument from me. Yeah, I've noticed you guys have been re-releasing the back catalog.
Yeah, on vinyl. Yeah.
Yeah, recently Feline, now Oral Sculpture. So it must be satisfying to see your work on vinyl again.
Yeah, I never lost faith in it. You know, although, you know, everyone said CD would last forever, which is bullshit. But the sound was always so much more compressed. And those of us who like listening to a really great hi-fi much prefer vinyl.
You know, I mean, CDs are nice. They're for portability. But it's the difference between, you know, McDonald's and fine dining, quite honestly.
Exactly. And also, as an add-on, you cannot roll a joint so well on a CD.
No. So I imagine that your records have quite a few seeds still stuck in them, and is that what I'm getting?
No, not on the cover.
So describe for us your music collection. It sounds like you've kept your vinyl over the years. What is that like?
Yes, I have, yeah. I've kept a hell of a lot of vinyl from the late 70s.
And so a lot of that vinyl right now is very, very difficult to get. So you probably have a lot of the original pressings, the collector's items, that sort of thing.
A lot of the singles that I was buying over a short period before I started getting more albums and singles. Yeah, I got a lot of those old singles from 77, 78 in the UK. You know,
you still play them or are you a little bit precious about them?
I'm not too precious because they have to be played. I'm not a collector who doesn't use things. That, you know, it's like I'm not just going to have a record just to file it away. It has to be used.
And what are some of your go-to records?
Well, that's question is as broad as it's long. It really depends on the mood, doesn't it? I mean, I do. There are records which I tend to play more than others. That's true. Like I suppose most people. One of them is a vinyl of "Snowflakes Are Dancing" by Tamita. Oh, okay. Now that was a revelation when I first heard it, because it made me discover the music of Claude Debussy, despite it being on synthesizers, one of the first synthesizer albums by a Japanese guy called Tamita, playing the works of Debussy. And now I'm a big fan of Debussy's music, but actually I was introduced to it via a synthesizer album.
One of the things we talk about here on the show is sometimes the asteroid album. You find out the asteroid is about to hit the planet. You've got roughly an hour before it hits. Which one do you put on?
Well, I wouldn't. I'd be looking for my beloved so I could fuck her while we die.
Okay. And then what would you do with the other 52 minutes?
The other 52 minutes? Do the same. Remember, I'm French.
Oh, that's right.
I'm not a premature Californian ejaculator. I'm a Frenchman.
Okay, I thought maybe you'd like to get a vinyl record to roll a joint on. All right, fair enough.
Well, yeah, the last spliff.
So the Stranglers have had this very interesting, very compelling history, and very long. I mean, a lot of bands, most bands, tend to burn out. They tend to go out rather quickly. Not the Stranglers. Well, what is the secret to the longevity of a band?
Well, I've been asked this question a few times. I can only put it down, first of all, the human factor. We get on well with each other. You know, we irritate each other occasionally when we've been in each other's laps for far too long, but most of the time we get on well. But we eliminated one of the evils that arise between bands. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you start out as mates, you know, so you're on a relatively equal footing. And then if you do have success, the rewards go to the songwriter initially. He or she might get more money, more royalties. They might get more attention as well. And suddenly the dynamic changes between friends. So we eliminated that from day one. And we took the template of a band, a Californian band actually, called The Doors, who shared everything equally. So that eliminates one of the reasons for sort of bands falling out. But also, you know, we since we were fortunate enough not to be forced to follow any successful line that we might have created, we were allowed to, well, we allowed ourselves to push our limited talents as far as they could go. So, if you like music, you don't just particularly follow one genre. You'll be touched by all kinds of stuff. And we've always wanted to play, you know, sometimes I wanted to try to experiment with a Django Reinhardt type rhythm, you know, or a synthesizer thing. And so, you know, our audiences, you know, we didn't always bring our audiences along with us. You know, we lost them sometimes because we went up a complete different alley. But, you know, I think you owe that to yourself. The bands that I've known who have had big success and then been pressurized to follow that success have lost their creativity. Mm. And life's too short, you know.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's interesting because you can, by taking those sort of chances like you have from album to album, that you tend to have a progression, something new on each record. And if people aren't willing to take the journey, that's okay. But the people who are become really strong, lifelong fans of the band.
Yeah. No, you're right. Absolutely. I think ultimately you get the audience that you deserve.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like countries get the governments they deserve.
Hey, we've done nothing to deserve Scott Morrison. Let's be clear about that.
I was thinking of the USA more than Scott Morrison. Yeah. Well, look, let's face it. It's a leader has to actually show leadership. Mm-hmm. And not, I think they have to surely be quite strong on psychology. Mm-hmm. And you don't go on holiday or stay on holiday when there's an emergency back home. I mean, I suspect the poor bloke will be kicking himself for having been that, what's the word?
Turd?
Unempathetic.
Yeah, look, he missed his opportunity. There was a window for him to be able to lead and to really, you know, shine, and he missed it. And if you look at someone was actually quite effective in an emergency situation, Rudy Giuliani during September 11th.
Yeah.
The country, the city had written him off. He was on his way out. That event happened. He stood up. He was a leader, and he even got a few years of respect out of it before he completely shit the bed again.
Oh, yeah. He's just when you're thinking it was safe to support Giuliani, he goes and puts his foot in it.
Yeah. So is the Stranglers a political band at all?
Well, we are citizens, and citizens have a vote and have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And we keep ourselves well informed. So I think if you take it from the original Greek, polis, yes, we are as political as, you know, as anyone, as the cab driver, you know, the cab driver in the yellow cab or whatever. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got an opinion. Opinions are free, I suppose, but facts are a bit more expensive. Mm. However, we're political, social, sexual. I'd like to think so anyway.
The Stranglers are often assumed from the punk movement, and they're the ethos, some of the visuals, certainly the band name would lend itself towards that. However, it feels like the band gets lumped in with these punk bands when really the Stranglers are quite different.
Well, I'd like to think that everyone is quite different from everyone else, and it's the differences that bind us. They should be anyway. We formed in 1974, 9/11, 1974 was when we registered the name The Stranglers. So the 11th of September, 1974, 9/11 means something slightly different to us. So that's when we registered the name, The Stranglers. And it kind of coincided with us, something which was happened a bit later, about a year or 18 months later. And we were chosen to be the first band to support Patti Smith when she first came over to Europe. Mm. And also we were the first band to be asked to play with the Ramones when they first came to Europe. In that way, we were associated with what was happening, starting to happen on the ground. Also, a lot of the bands, the Sex Pistols and the Clash, were coming to see, and the Damned, were coming to see us before they'd formed their bands. There was a sort of cross-pollination, and there was an overlapping, and we were playing the same venues, having the same punch-ups, and garnering the same kind of animosity. But that came to a head, and, you know, I remember Joe Strummer when he was in a rhythm and blues band playing the pubs, the 101ers and stuff, and we were all friends at one point, and then there was a bit of a big divide between the Stranglers and everyone else, and which was a bit hurtful at the time. The press turned against us because everyone was supporting the Pistols and the Clash. But on the other hand, it did us a huge favor. It meant that we were isolated and we'd lost our support, life support, if you want, you know, our peer group had turned on us, turned against us. So we kind of developed autonomously, sort of organically and separately from everyone else, which gave us huge artistic freedom, gave us the freedom to explore all different, you know, avenues. And also it coincided with change in technology, you know, from analog to digital. Mm-hmm. And we were berated for using synthesizers.
Yeah.
You know, and that was just before kind of the 80s synth thing, you know, the cold wave, if you want.
Right.
So the Stranglers' history coincided with an awful lot of things, and we kind of developed independently from all those things.
probably the period the people think of the most in terms of the change in musical direction is the gospel according to Men in Black.
Well, that was that ruined us temporarily because we were obsessed and we were recording all over the place and all kinds of weird shit was happening to us. It wasn't commercially successful at the time, although now it's being cited as a masterpiece. I'm not sure if that's the correct term, but we experimented a hell of a lot with recording techniques. We were trying stuff out which hadn't actually been commercially created yet, you know.
It's very brave to try that. And if memory serves me correct, that was an album, the first album that you guys did on Liberty. So it was a new label, a new relationship as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, we had first originally been signed up by United Artists, who then got taken over by EMI. And EMI didn't know what the fuck to do with us. They looked at us askance and then just told us that, well, punk is dead, you guys aren't doing much better, and sort of ended the relationship. So we invoked an article, a clause in our contract, which forced them to release a song which they really did not want to release. It was called Golden Brown. And it had a harpsichord on it, had a weird time signature on it, and they really did not want to release it. They did inevitably have to, so they released it in what they considered to be the just pre-Christmas, when they thought it would be drowned in the tsunami of pre-Christmas releases. Unfortunately for them, it was a worldwide hit. So then they asked us for something similar, a follow-up. So we gave them a seven-minute song in French instead.
Yeah, you guys know how to make friends at the record label. So was there a lot of convincing that you had to do with the label to have the album, the Men in Black album, released?
Not at the time, because the Men in Black album was actually before Golden Brown. But that's basically the record company just didn't know what to do with Men in Black album. And they thought, they thought that was the end of the band. And then we brought out Golden Brown. But I mean, for me, I'm a believer in if you got an album, take people on a trip, it's not, shouldn't necessarily just be a collection of different disparate songs. It should take you on a little journey, 40 odd minute journey. But people have such low attention spans these days, I'm not sure if that kind of concept would work anymore. Mm.
What album out of the entire Stranglers catalog do you feel best represents the Stranglers at a creative peak?
I'd like to think that we've had a few creative peaks and also some creative lows, that's for sure. I think The Raven and The Men in Black are two albums which I think are pretty much there.
Mm-hmm. Now, for the record nerds, I believe The Raven, it originally had a 3D cover, and some of the artwork had to be removed in future presses. Do you recall the story of that?
Yeah, I do. It was a limited number of 3D covers, I think about 10,000. The inner sleeve artwork, some of it had to be changed, actually because of Joe Bielke-Peterson in Australia. There was a song on it called Nuclear Device, which is about our experiences when we were in Queensland. And I don't know if you know the history, that's probably before your time in Australia, but Queensland was a bit like the Deep South under George Wallace in America. The groups of three or more people constituted an illegal gathering. There was massive gerrymandering. His party, I think the country or the national party or something, was the votes of the ranchers were worth much more than the votes of the citizens in the towns. He was selling off Aboriginal tribal lands for uranium mining and fucking up the Gold Coast, building high rises, blotting out the sun, the light in, on the Gold Coast, and all kinds of repressive measures, you know. And he sent his thugs to beat us up at a couple of shows. So all this was fuel for our creativity, with the result that then we were threatened with legal actions because we did a caricature of him in the lyric sheet on the inner album. So there are copies with him on it, and there are lots of copies without him on it.
I'm going to have to look this guy up. He sounds like a real bully.
Oh, he was a bastard of the first order. He was refused entry into a few countries, but he was basically a dictatorship in Queensland for many years. Joe Bielke Peterson, check him out.
Okay, will do.
But fortunately, Queensland's changed.
It's beautiful up there now. I've been there a few times.
Yeah, it's like, it's fantastic. Really? Well, it was always beautiful, but it was just run by this fucking gangster.
Bit of the Wild West, yeah. For the first LP, and I'm going to, hopefully I don't butcher the name, Radis Norvegicus.
That's right.
It was originally to be titled Dead on Arrival, but the album title changed at the last minute. What was the reason for that change?
Well, no, it wasn't necessarily going to be called Dead on Arrival. That was one of about half a dozen titles which were thrown around. But because there's a classical suite on that album called Down in the Sewer, which is about rats surviving any Holocaust, anything, and adapting within one generation. They can evolve really quickly. So, they can develop protections, sort of chemical protections and everything. So we decided the Ratus Norvegicus, which is the native rat to Europe, as opposed to Ratus Ratus, which I think is the black rat, which comes from India, which was people said was responsible for the bubonic plague.
And the rat has since become a symbol for the band.
It's a symbol of survival. It's a symbol of survival.
Okay. The very famous Stranglers logo has been with you since really day one, from the early singles up to the posters for your gigs in Australia. Is there a story on the band logo?
The actual the print of The Stranglers, you mean?
The Stranglers, yeah, the kind of cursive.
Yeah. It's a bit of a sad story. It's a guy called Kevin Sparrow, who was an art director. He was brought in to find us to create a distinctive logo, if you want. And he hung out with us for quite a while. And then he overdosed on New Year's Eve, 1979, I believe, and died, you know. So that's the very brief history of that logo.
Yeah, well, he seems to have got it right on day one, because it's still here some 40 years later, still in use. Now, with all the vinyl re-releasing of the Stranglers catalog, it's on the Stranglers record label. Are you starting to get the rights back to these albums from so many years ago?
We are trying, and it's something we should have got involved in years back. But we weren't that smart on those kind of things, to be honest. It's true. I think artists should claim back the rights after they've been exploited.
Yeah. Well, I think at most recording contracts, every 30 years, I think, after 30 years, the artist gets their rights back. So we've spoken to a lot of bands who are just waiting for that, for the clock to tick over.
Well, 30 years is a long time in the life of a band, though.
It is. But and again, I want to remind folks, go to thestranglers.co.uk. Not only will you see all the tour dates, but you could buy the records directly from the band. And guess what? If you're in New Zealand or Australia, you are in luck. The Stranglers will be playing Perth February 5th, Melbourne February 7th, Sydney February 8th, Brisbane February 9th, and Adelaide Adelaide, February 10th, then over to New Zealand, Christchurch on the 13th, Wellington the 14th, and finally Auckland on the 15th, and then on to Europe and the UK for more dates. So head over to thestranglers.co.uk. Jean-Jacques, thank you so much for taking the time, and we hope, hopefully by the time you guys land here, we'll have these fires under control.
I do hope so, for your sakes. We've really felt for you guys over the last several weeks. So we're looking forward to coming over. Thanks very much for having me on your show.
You got it.
All right, what an all right dude. Jean-Jacques J.J. Burnell of The Stranglers. Again, head over to thestranglers.co.uk. They got plenty of vinyl up there. And of course, check them out if you're anywhere near the cities that they're touring. If you're in Australia or New Zealand, don't forget they're here in February. And of course, throughout Europe, the rest of 2020. That's thestranglers.co.uk. And that's it for this week's episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thanks again for tuning in. And please make sure to share these episodes over social media. That's how we build the Vinyl Guide community. Share it over Facebook, over Instagram, tweet about it. Any way you can inform your friends, your record nerd buddies, on how to access this podcast is much appreciated. We'll be back with a brand new episode soon, so until we talk next time, keep spinning. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Send your thoughts to Nate@thevinylguide.com or follow or tag us on Instagram @vinylguide. Until next time, keep spinning.